Take your seats, please.
Take your seats. We'll just start talking. All right, so I would also like to reiterate Brother James's comments about the thanks that we certainly feel for the local brothers and sisters and all the time and effort to put this Bible school on. It is certainly a great benefit to us as individuals. It is certainly a great benefit to us as a community, and we cannot express our thanks enough. It is for coming from an ecclesia that puts on a gathering. I can't imagine the amount of work and time that goes into a whole Bible school. So truly, truly a great thanks from all of us for everything that everyone does. The second disclosure is, as I mentioned, gathering. We also in Denver have a fine gathering. You know, the drive from here on Highway 40, 70, 64, one of those, whatever goes all the way across Kansas. I mean, once you get going past St. Louis, I mean, it just all looks the same until you get to Denver. I mean, it is not too bad of a drive. So if you haven't been out, lots of y'all have been out, please come join us. I will have the dates. I didn't pull up the dates. Sister D right now is probably listening virtually and shaking her head that I don't have the dates on me, but I am inviting everybody. We'll announce the official dates later, but it is at the end of September, a wonderful time to come out to Denver and to enjoy some cool weather. The final is this. I have frequently I will use, you know, eSort, some other Bible software. I think many of us do. And so when I just disclosure, when I cut and paste from using that software, sometimes I'm looking at the King James Version, sometimes I'm looking at the ESV version. I don't always pay attention to which version I'm copying and pasting from. So if we are reading a reference, it is either the King James Version or the ESV, unless disclosed. So if it sounds a little different, it just meant I was on the ESV when I was copying and pasting. So those are kind of our bookkeeping things. So our topic this week is going to be on the Sabbath. Now when you hear that that is our topic, you may have a couple initial thoughts. Like, do we really have enough material to talk about for a full week on the Sabbath? And the answer is yes, and we are not going to talk about everything. There are going to be facets and aspects of the Sabbath we are not going to address. And that's just because of actually the size and scope of the study. So if there are topics we don't talk about, we can certainly talk about lunch, talk about dinner, talk about it while kids are out playing softball. From my standpoint, this was a topic I had not studied out very much. Right? Sabbath, it's one of the Ten Commandments, it's kind of there in the background. In reality, this is an extension of a study we were doing on the Creation Week. And this was, we get to the seventh day, and so this kind of turned into a study all its own. This, in reality, has been one of my more enjoyable and I think personally impactful studies that I've done in a while. And so hopefully some of that enjoyment, some of that excitement, some of the spiritual benefits can be conveyed through our studies this week. Now, what are we going to cover this week? So briefly, our outline for the week, we're going to spend the rest of today talking about the seventh day of creation. We will spend 2 days talking about the law and how the Sabbath is recorded in the law of Moses, because that's the majority of our material. That will also include discussing why we have an individual who was put to death on the Sabbath day for picking up sticks, right? One of the interesting accounts that we have in the Old Testament. We will then talk about some of the history that transpires and some of the cultural background that brings us to the time of Jesus. One of the issues we have lots of times when we read the New Testament is we read the New Testament as if they are living directly after the events in the law of Moses. We want them to be following the law and living the law as we have it in the Old Testament. But they have 1,000 years of time where they're building up understanding, building up interpretations, and Jesus is coming into that cultural context. So we're going to spend some time talking about what that cultural context is. And then we will talk about some of Jesus' teachings and his interactions with the Sabbath. And then hopefully our last day we'll be talking about some practical aspects, because at the end of the day, yes, to to Brother James's discussion. We have an importance of an academic understanding, but then what is the impact for our service and our walk and our life in the name of Christ? So let's talk about the seventh day of creation. And we're going to start with a couple thought questions here. How does the seventh day differ from the other days of creation? What does it mean for God to rest? And what does it mean for a day to be sanctified, to be holy? Okay, so those are going to be our three kind of questions kind of let ruminate around in the back of your mind while we go through this, because that's going to be what we're going to try to address. So let's talk about a very brief overview of the creation week. Again, we talked about some of this last night in Brother Kyle's class. He read for us Genesis 1-2, where it says that before creation, the world was without form and void. Now, those two words in the Hebrew, if we look them up in the lexicon, they also mean that chaos and empty. Okay? So the world before creation was chaotic and it was empty. And we can actually think about the creation week as addressing those two elements. That essentially creation is undoing the chaos and creation is undoing the emptiness. And so the first 3 days actually resolve the chaos, the structure of the first 3 days. If we think about it, in the beginning on day one, we talked about last night, light and dark are divided. What happens on the next day? What is divided? Right? Firmament, right? We now have space and we have water above and water below. We have a division again. What happens on day three? Water and land are divided. So we now have structure. So we've gone from chaos to order. The first 3 days of creation create structure. The next 3 days address the void, address the emptiness. And God puts things into that structure. And it follows the same first 3 days. We go back in the same order, right? This is why when kids ask, well, we have light and dark in day one. Why do we have the sun, moon, and stars created on day four? Right? That's an interesting thought question. But the answer is this is how the creation week is structured. Because now God is putting things into what he has ordered, what he has created, that space. And so now the sun, moon, and stars go into the skies, go in the firmament. Okay? Day five, we have fish and birds. So now the firmament and the waters are now populated. And then what's the last thing to be populated? Our last day of creation, structure, is the last thing that's filled. Man, creeping things are put on the land. Okay? So the creation week follows the reversal of this chaos and void. So let's turn over to Genesis 1 and we'll start reading. And we begin on verse 31. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. So, could creation be done there? Could we be finished with the creation week? Is there anything left to be created? Verse 2. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all of his work, which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all of his work, which God created and made. And so we are struck with this seventh day being different than the other days. So how is this seventh day different than the other 6 days of creation? And shout them out. Okay? There's rest, not creation. What else is different? It's sanctified and set apart. It's holy, your translation may say. What else is different?
It's blessed by God.
We have a blessing by God, and I'm going to tie that in with the sanctifying. What does it not say?
Work.
We don't have work. Instead of being holy and sanctified, it's not called very good. There's nothing to see is very good. And then the last part, What do we not have? Evening and the morning of the seventh day. And so these are going to be, again, this is kind of going to address our thought questions, and this is going to be the 3 points we're going to look at. Okay, so let's start first with the day of rest. What does it mean when God rests? Because to me, I have a couple blinders on when I hear the word rest. When we think rest, we have a nice rec period during Bible school. When we think about rest, what does that mean? To me, it's a nap. It's sitting on that swing outside, you know, having a drink, talking, relaxing with people. It's a time of resting, rejuvenation, physically, mentally. In my mind, that's what rest is. Does God need rest in that term? Well, let's turn over to Isaiah. Again, a memory verse for lots of us. And we're going to read Isaiah 40:28. Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, faints not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. Now the second blinder I have, besides my definition of rest, is a blinder about the seventh day or the Sabbath. Because let's turn over to Exodus 20, because what is one of the components of the Sabbath day under the law of Moses? It is a avoiding work. Okay, so let's read Exodus 20, let's begin verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and you shall do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your livestock or your sojourner who is within your gates. For in the 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So for mankind, there is benefit to physical and mental and spiritual rejuvenation. That is a benefit for us, and that's part of the Sabbath rest. But again, does God need that? It also means when we look at the law, we can distill it down to what we are not supposed to do, right? No work. And we know that's the direction the Jews, and especially the first century Jews, and well, even Jews today, take it. What are we not supposed to do? And there are many definitions of what work is, and that's why we find people deciding how many steps they can take on the Sabbath day. Why the disciples can or cannot pick grain as they walk through a field on the Sabbath day. We can find why it is wrong for an individual who is healed of lameness to pick up his bed and walk on the Sabbath day. Because there are definitions of what you cannot do. So those are, in my mind, rest is relaxation and not working. But again, those definitions don't apply to God. So what does it mean for God to rest? Well, who has a different definition for the word rest written in their Bibles? Maybe written in their margin. What's another translation? Well, again, we look up in the lexicon. Rest means to cease, to desist, or rest. So let's look up the next time this word in Hebrew is used in the Bible. So let's turn over to Genesis 8. And we'll read verse 22. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night, shall not cease, shall not rest. Same word in the Hebrew. So the next usage in Scripture of this word points us towards not the concept of stopping, or to the concept of stopping or ceasing. And it's not rest as we think about it in our physical terms. So let's ask this question a different way. Why or what is God stopping or ceasing on the seventh day? What is he no longer doing? Great. So why stop creating? Why cease creating? Why is it important to stop creating at some point? So let's ask, we'll turn to this side of the room. Let's ask Brother Al. You got a drawing you're working on. You got a paint you're working on. And you never stop working on it.
I would hate it.
Probably a true statement. But does it ever end up serving a purpose? No. Brother AC, you are trying to get, and you'd say, you're trying to get the field just perfect for planting. And you never stop to actually get to the next step of the planting process, right? Because we'd all agree, that's, right, planting, gardening, farming. I mean, that ties us very close to the creation works of God. And if you never let that field get ready to go,
you got a disaster,
right? So part of the creation process is knowing when to stop. Because if you don't stop, the thing you're creating never fulfills its purpose. It never is able to stand on its own as a piece of art that's to be observed and appreciated. It never can fulfill its purpose of providing a harvest. It can't do what it's supposed to be done. So a creator has to know at what point it's time to let the creation stand on its own and fulfill its purpose. Now that does leave us the question though of what is God still doing on the Sabbath day and what is the purpose of his creation? Now we all know the answer to that. But let's see what the text takes us to. Because our next question that we're going to leave, that one hanging in the air, as we address our next topic, which is the idea of a day to be sanctified. As the King James says, sanctified. Other translations say holy. And we already gave the answer to the next question, which is holy means set apart. We often think about holy in terms of religious terms, things in terms of its relationship to God, but we know it just means something set apart. Okay? It has a distinct purpose. Ultimately, it is frequently connected to our service to God and things dedicated to the service of God because God himself is holy. God himself is set apart. And interestingly, though, the first thing in Scripture called holy, called sanctified, is not a thing, and we have lots of things in Scripture that are designated as holy. Think about all the things of the tabernacle, all the things of the temple, all the people that serve in those institutions, and yet the first thing called holy in the Bible is time. A period of time, first thing sanctified. Now, what does it mean for time to be holy? How do we come to an understanding of what that means? Well, let's look at another time where things are called holy, and let's turn over to Leviticus 23. Because we'll take an example from the law where we have another time or another instance where time is set aside as holy. May have got it kicked off. So, let's look at Leviticus 23, and we're going to read verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, concerning the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be a holy convocation, even these are my feasts. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, and holy convocation you shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. And the remainder of chapter 23 outlines all the feasts under the law of Moses. So each of these feasts have their own significance, have their own meaning, have their own purpose. But what are some overarching reasons for these holy convocations? if we're just brainstorming, what are reasons for the feast? Why did God say all the people have to come up to Jerusalem 3 times a year? For what reason? Or reasons?
Worship.
Okay. So I'm going to give that the definition of fellowship with God. Okay. So worship and fellowship with the Lord. Why else?
Thanks for basic things like the food.
Okay. So a recognition of dependence, right? They are taking off time. They're going and dwelling there. And so they are on their own, recognizing their dependence on God. What is another reason? Brother Dan emphasized this in his talk.
Well, could it be pilgrimage?
We got pilgrimage, so I think that goes with the indication of dedication and observance to God and recognizing his superiority. What word, what pronoun did Brother Dan emphasize in his talk? Is me going up for Passover all about me? Or is it about us? Right? So it's not just about me and my relationship to God. It's about me and my relationship to God and my relationship to everybody else that is coming up to pilgrimage. So it's also a time of fellowship with other servants of God. And I'm going to say those are essentially the three functions of following this idea of holy time. So for those that are listening on Zoom, we hopefully got you back. You didn't miss anything major, except for the answers to everything about the Sabbath. Yeah. So, I would summarize reasons for holy time or sanctified time under the law. Communion and worship of God. Communal connection with others. We talked about sacrifice, our wants, desires to worship of God. Recognizing our reliance on God. And I'm going to propose those are the same reasons that if we take those reasons, we can feed those back into the reasons for holy time in the creation week. Communion with God, connection with others, and ultimately recognizing a reliance on God. Because this also suggests that this time of the seventh day is a time of worship. And when we think about worship, we normally think about worship of the Lord, and especially in the Old Testament times, as being physically driven. We talked about these feasts going up to Jerusalem. We think about the tabernacle. We think about the most holy place. We think about Solomon's temple. But this would propose that in the creation itself is a temple. This is a point of worship. So let's turn over to Isaiah 40. And I know this verse is read lots of ways and oftentimes fits into discussions on creation and some other things. But I think what it does tell us is give us some insights into this relationship. Isaiah 40, begin verse 22. Do you not know? Do you not hear? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundation of the earth? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out in the heavens like a curtain and spreads them like a tent to dwell in. It's like a tent to dwell in. If you look up in your concordance, that word tent here is the same word that is used throughout the Exodus for tabernacle. So ultimately, Isaiah is saying the creation is like a dwelling place for God. It is like God's tabernacle. It is like his tent of dwelling. And that's what the creation week is telling us. God is making a place to meet with his people. The time of the rest on the seventh day when God ceased creating is also so he can have fellowship with his creation. Now, there's an interesting I think side importance or side message about the importance of this concept of holy time, which we're going to talk about more throughout the week. But it comes also in the law of Moses. And this is going to seem like we're going down a rabbit hole, but I promise it will loop back around to why sanctified time is important. So if we think about the Exodus account, what are probably the two big failings of the children of Israel in their time in the wilderness? Golden calf.
And they didn't go to the beginning of the line.
Right, and they didn't listen to the report of Joshua and Caleb. So if we look at the account of the golden calf, one of their great failings, it actually tells us something about how important sanctified time is in terms of serving God. Now, how many people have heard of this term, a chiasm? Okay. So a chiasm is a frequent structure in Hebrew writings. And it can basically, you can think about it like a stair step. We have a A, B, C, B, A structure. It can be as long or as short. But what happens in this is the steps, if you think about it as a step up and a step down, the steps parallel each other in some way. So either they mirror or they are contrasts. They comment somehow. So step A and A are going to parallel each other. B and B are going to parallel each other. And that means that the important focal point of the discussion is actually the center. And so lots of times when we're reading Hebrew scriptures and sometimes writings in the New Testament, there's some arguments that many of Jesus's parables are actually chiasms. The emphasis then is not the end. And in English, for us, the conclusion is typically what we build towards. But in many times Hebrew writings, the most important focal point is actually the middle of the account. One of the very common examples, and if you want to look this up, one of the very common examples is the flood. The flood has a very clear chiastic structure. And the very center part of that chiasm is God remembered Noah. Okay? So that's the center part of that chiasm. Okay, that's the focal point, is God remembering man and his creation. So the golden calf is a chiasm. Okay? So if we just think about the account, we're not going to read big chunks of it. But if we recall, Moses is in the mountain. He's receiving all the instructions about how to build the tabernacle. That's what he's being given in the mountain. Meanwhile, down at the bottom, the people are freaked out that Moses hasn't come back yet. So they build themselves a golden calf. Ultimately, Moses comes down. He's furious. He smashes the two tablets of stone. He takes care of all the consequences of it. And then they ultimately go and they build the tabernacle. So if you look at what transpires in that, Moses is being told how to build a physical structure. The people say Moses is gone. God's presence is on the mountain, but we need a physical representation of God. That's what we want, Aaron. Make us a God. We need something tangible. So if that's the failing that the people had, they wanted something they could relate to, something physical. And Moses just had been given the instructions on how to build the tabernacle. What would be our kind of human response? What should be the solution to help the people out? Build the tabernacle. You need something physical? We're going to give you a meeting place. We're going to tell you where God's presence physically is. We're going to have you have a high priest that you can go, you can interact with, where you can take sacrifices. So a human response would be, you need something physical? We're going to give you something physical. But interestingly, that's not the most important guardrails God puts on this interaction. So when we look at the account in Exodus 25 through 31, we have all the instructions about how the tabernacle is to be built. And when we come to this section on our daily reading, we oftentimes feel like we have deja vu. We feel like we kind of, maybe we got lost on read the wrong day, and maybe we looked at the wrong week, because the end of Exodus is the exact same terminology, the exact same words. It's just instead of Moses, what you need to do, it's here's what Moses did. And so those are sections that parallel each other. In the middle is the account of the golden calf. Now, interestingly, what is the last commandment that Moses is given after he's given the instructions to build the tabernacle and before he goes down to see the people? Let's turn over to Exodus 31. What time am I till? 10 after? Straight up? Okay. Exodus 31. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, verily my Sabbaths you shall keep. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord that does sanctify you, and you shall keep the Sabbath therefore. And then, after Moses deals with all the fallout of the golden calf, what is the first commandment he tells the people? What's the first thing he says to the people before, hey, take Aholiab and go gather all this stuff and build this physical place to meet the Lord? Chapter 35. And Moses gathered all the congregation of the children of Israel together and said unto them, these are the words which the Lord hath commanded that you should do them. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day there shall be to you a holy day, a Sabbath of rest to the Lord. Whosoever doth work therein shall be put to death. You shall kindle no fire throughout your habitations upon the Sabbath day. And then the people have to bring all their contributions for the physical building of the tabernacle. So why then, what is one of the lessons we can get from this structure? Well, it emphasizes the importance of holy or sacred time. The flesh wants to emphasize a holy place, but the structure and timing of the Sabbath laws in this account emphasize that what is more important than a proper place in the worship of God is having the proper time. If your problem is idolatry, you want to go serve some physical thing, the first guardrails that God puts on that is not giving you an alternative physical thing. The first guardrails that the Lord puts on that is you need to set aside the proper time and space to meet with Him. Now, on to our last point. What did we say was the other unique thing about the seventh day? God rested, was not created. God called it holy and sanctified rather than calling it very good. What was the last thing that was unique? Right? Every other day, evening and morning were. First day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day, evening and morning were. And then the seventh day? So what does that convey? What does the account of the creation week want us to gather from that piece of information? So from a structure standpoint, if all we had were the, you know, Genesis 1:1 through 2:3, what would we think? Does the seventh day seemingly end? No. The seventh day is portrayed as being a lasting day of Sabbath between God and His people and His creation. The seventh day is not just a result of creation, it's the goal of creation. Genesis gives the idea that rest was not just for a physically tired God, but instead was a time to appreciate and interact with His creation. The seventh day is the culmination of creation. It is the purpose for which creation was started. And we know that obviously the seventh day of the creation week was not the finality, right? Because right after that, we end up with the events of the garden. And we understand why that Sabbath, why that fellowship between God and His creation was interrupted. But it doesn't mean that that is not still ultimately the plan, right? We hear this terminology when we think about fellowship, unity, oneness with God, appreciating each other, there is very much language that takes us immediately to the kingdom. We know that that is still God's goal. So let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 4. We're going to read this from the ESV because, again, there are some words that you probably have written in your margin if you have a King James Bible. Hebrews 4, verse 8. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whosoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter into that rest so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. All right, so what are our points from the seventh day? So first, the seventh day of creation is a day when God completed his work of creation. Ultimately, it is a time where of fellowship and unity, where the world is in harmony with God. We think about that terminology that God walked in the garden. He is looking to walk with Adam and Eve in that instance. We know that they've already sinned, they're hiding, but that desire for fellowship and unity is part of creation. Man and all creation is dedicated to the worship and service of God. That is the ultimate purpose. And we think about that future day when we think about the whole world to be filled with the glory of the Lord. The seventh day is symbolically without end, pointing towards that ultimate purpose of God for this creation. That it would ultimately fulfill that purpose where all things bring glory and honor to Him. And again, it represents His plan for creation. Let's turn over to Revelation 21. Again, we'll read. We'll kind of, again, we're tying into some of Brother Kyle's thoughts in terms of the connection of creation and where it takes us. Revelation 21, verse 1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. And we see that reversal of the events and the consequences of the events of the garden. And we see that relationship restored. He will dwell with them and they will be his people. Again, taking us back to that situation that creation was designed for. Now, next we are going to shift into talking about the law of Moses and the Sabbath day. And so our homework, your mental assignment, is to think about why and what reasons is the Sabbath given under the law of Moses. One of the things we do not know historically is how much of the seventh day from creation carries forward in service and life and the people of Israel when they are in Egypt. So we don't have any clear indicators that they observed the Sabbath prior to the law outside of some implications in the gathering of manna, which we'll talk about. But what is the purpose? Why was the Sabbath given? Is it strictly about physical rest? So that's question number one. Question number two, which is not something we'll probably get to tomorrow, but again is an interesting process to think about, is why is the man stoned for picking up sticks on the Sabbath day? Is it just about this is God's law and this is the significance of God's law and you need to take it seriously? That's certainly one aspect. But is that the only aspect? Another thought problem, which we'll leave with, which we probably won't get time to talk about, is around the golden calf. We had one interesting comment, or we had two qualifications. The first one was before the golden calf account is when the Sabbath day is connected to the punishment of death. After the golden calf, there's a qualification that you should not kindle a fire. Is there a reason? Okay. So those are just some thought questions to think about until our time tomorrow, and we will finish there. Thank you.